Every September, Banned Books Week celebrates the freedom to write books that express differing ideas and experiences, as well as the freedom to access, choose, and read books that expand our learning. Here at the Only Schoolers podcast, we are book lovers. Banned Books Week was last week, but today we'd like to replay this episode from season 3, where we talk about some of the books we love. And as it turns out, a fair number of them have been challenged at some point. What can we say? We love banned books. You're listening to the Only Schoolers podcast. I'm Gina Prosh, and hanging out here with me as always is my co-host, Kristen Edwards.
I turned the page and poof, there it was. Time to record again. And here's our next episode of the podcast. And at the same time, we've also turned the page into February, which to homeschoolers is known as the longest month of the year.
Can't believe it is my last officially homeschooling February, but here I am. And we're already on day 17, so just a few more days to go.
I don't know that I noticed February being such a weirdly slow month back when I was working, you know, or even when I was going to school. During college, you know, there was always papers to write, so the days passed pretty quickly. You know, I'm trying to meet deadlines. And then when I was working, February was just another month, although there was the bonus of a couple of state holidays in there, so that made it nice. But when we first started homeschooling?
Oh, I hear that. I mean, it really threw me a loop those first couple of years when the doldrums of February hit. And when I think of doldrums, I mean, I immediately go to Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And if that's not ominous, I don't know what is. I mean, the last lines of the poem. Now the wedding guest turned from the bridegroom's door. He went like one that hath been stunned and is of sense forlorn. A sadder and wiser man, he rose the morrow morn. I mean, hopefully that's not us on March 1st.
I hope not. But seriously, doldrums is, it's such a great word, really, to describe February. I mean, slow, sluggish, subdued, static. Maybe if we can avoid killing any albatrosses during this month, it will make those February doldrums seem better. So, can anyone out there tell what we're going to be talking about during this episode of the Only Schoolers podcast?
Books, books, books. This week, because if there is anything that can take the edge off the doldrums, it's diving into some really great books. And if you can't get away to travel because you're snowed in, well, at least you can escape into an adventure in a book. And hopefully it will turn out better than The Ancient Mariner's Journey.
It can't be worse. Well, since my word for this year is journey, you know I'm ready to get going. But first, before we settle down to talk about all our favorite books and book series for readers of all ages, let's hit those housekeeping details real quick. We asked last time, and we'd still like to know, do you have an idea for our grab bag conversations? Do you have a question for us? You can drop us a line at our email, onlyschoolers@gmail.com, or you can find us online at our website, onlyschoolers.com. We've got a super cute Only Schoolers grab bag with goodies for you if we talk about your topic.
And also be sure to hit that subscribe button on the podcast. And if you enjoy the show, I think we can safely say we wouldn't turn down a glowing 5-star review. We're also hanging out on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for that Only Schoolers handle and message us there.
We hope you enjoyed the Valentine's Day Poetry Tea Time as you celebrated Valentine's Day on Monday. And if you haven't yet, go ahead and snag that Guess Who Poetry Tea Time. It can add a little bit of intrigue to what's left of February. And both of those are available at Etsy. If you haven't seen those tea time sets yet, head on over to the Only Schoolers Etsy shop. You can find them there as well as a few other tea time guides.
So that's it for the housekeeping.
Does that mean we can talk about books now? I feel like we've been waiting almost 2 years to do this episode. Am I right?
You are 100% right. I mean, literally, a podcast totally devoted to our favorite books from throughout our homeschooling years has been on the list in Kristen's spiral notebook since we started the show. And today's the day.
We did a little 5 minutes on the fifth Thursday about books. I think that was back in season 1, but that was just the Spark Notes edition. You know, we're talking unabridged version today. Books, books, and more books. Heads up, I am a librarian and I do have a list.
Not only does she have a list, I think she's probably got a list to coordinate the list. But because this is a half hour show, we'll try to keep things under control just a little bit.
I think we might be going a little bit over a half hour, but yeah, we'll try to control things a little bit, but not too much.
Nah, not too much. And along with our recommendations, we'll also be talking about our philosophy of reading for our kids, because we each have strong opinions about kids and reading. But I know exactly where I want to start, and that's with us. So give me your three desert island books and a brief explanation of why it made the cut. Only one thing, one caveat. This is not counting the Bible, because everybody says the Bible. So just assume that the Gideons have flown over and dropped a copy of the Bible on your desert island. So go.
Okay. Oh, this is so hard. I mean, this is why I only have one kid, because it is easy to pick who's going to go to the desert island when there's only one. But I have so many favorite books, and I reread quite a few of them on a regular basis. So, okay, I'll start with something easy. A Child's Anthology of Poetry, and it's edited by Elizabeth, and I'm going to mess this up, Hauge Sword. Anyway, it's Hauge. First of all, it has so many memories of tea times with September. And secondly, there's nothing like poetry to make you laugh and cry and ponder life. And basically, that's all you have time to do on a desert island anyway. So that sounds like a good fit. I don't really know why this anthology is called a child's, because it's not nursery rhyme stuff at all. It's got Edgar Allan Poe, it's got Langston Hughes, Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, Keats, Tennyson, Wordsworth, you know, all the big names. So after I pack that one, I would go with a Complete Works of Jane Austen. The settings, you know, they're all just ordinary settings. The situations are too. It's just, you know, young ladies of the British gentry navigating life and love. But Austen can really skewer society while she's schooling us on our personal virtues and vices. So definitely The Complete Works. But if I could only pick one, I would pick Emma, hands down. I know there's all this hype about Mr. Darcy, but really, once you know Mr. Knightley, you're going to be like, Darcy who?
Okay, what's your last pick?
I have about three vying for this place, but I'm going to choose, and I feel like this time, I'm just going to like close my eyes and point, To Kill a Mockingbird. I first read it as an almost teen, and then I pick it up quite often now as an adult, and there's always some sort of new truth or inspiration to find there. So what about you?
Okay, I'm going with A Complete Works of William Shakespeare, because he covers everything. The funny stuff, the sad stuff, happy stuff, gut-wrenching stuff. And Complete Works will also help satisfy my poetry fix. And I think his sonnets are just endlessly interesting. If I had to choose only one play, I don't know, maybe King Lear, Merchant of Venice, Twelfth Night, maybe, because I'm on a desert island and I need a few laughs. Yeah. I don't know. Next up, I'm going with The Complete Works of Homer, but there, if I had to pick only one, The Odyssey wins hands down. Like you saying you reread books every few years, I reread The Odyssey regularly. It just never gets old. There's always something new there. That's definitely on my list.
And what's your last one?
Last but not least, if I were on a desert island, I would want The Complete Works of Mark Twain, because it would remind me of home here in Missouri. Also because it's fiction, nonfiction, essays. I mean, it's all sorts of fun stuff. There again, if I had to choose only one, I would go with Huckleberry Finn. And I have lost track of how many times I've read that book. And again, I find something new and funny and wonderful on it in every single reading. Both The Odyssey and The Huckleberry Finn include a good bunch of adventuring, which reminds me of all those Dora Explorer books that September loved when she was little. So how about we divide up our reading into like picture books that our kids loved when they were small, then move on to chapter books, middle reader types, and then some high school stuff. I know it's been a few years, but what are some of your favorite like picture books, board books that you read over and over and over and over when September was itty bitty?
You know, it has been a few years, but sometimes it just feels like it was yesterday, too. In that respect, definitely Dr. Seuss books. She especially loved Mr. Brown Can Moo, Can You. In fact, I used to recite it just to get her to giggle during a photo session, because it would just bring out the cutest little smile. She was so tiny. I mean, she was really just a few months old when we started sort of reading the board book. So it wasn't so much that she understood the silliness of it, but I think it was the rhyme and the rhythm of the voice that really got her giggling. And we had all the Sandra Boynton board books, and I still know all the words to What's Wrong, Little Pookie, which I may or may not not recite to the cats on occasion when they're fussy. You mentioned Dora, and we had a ton of Dora books. The ones that tied into the TV show, then there were other standalone ones that taught concepts like colors, numbers, whatever. We had every one of them. Probably the only book series that we had that even rivaled our Dora collection was Thomas the Tank Engine. And for those, we actually even wrote some of our own stories to go along with the ones we bought on her shelf of Thomas books. My favorite story that we wrote, and it was basically her telling me the story and me writing it down. So, you know, these were all her own words. She wrote "The Day James Got Sick," because she always did love that snarky red train far more than Thomas. As far as single titles that were our favorites, there are two that I clearly remember reading quite a bit. There's a book called McGillicuddy Could, and it's by Pamela Duncan Edwards. And then there was one titled Just in Case by Judith Viorst. And I think she really liked the determination of McGillicuddy. He's a kangaroo on a farm, and it's just really funny. But she also connected with the sort of anxiousness and the need to be prepared of the little boy in the Just in Case book. So what about Wyatt? What are some of his favorites?
Well, when he was super little, could not get enough of those Sandra Boynton board books, you know, the Going to Bed book, Pajama Time, Hippos Go Berserk, Snuggle Puppy. His favorites were always the hippo books there. He was a big fan of Chicka Chicka Boom Boom by Bill Martin Jr. and John Archambault, Crockett Johnson's Harold, and that Crazy Purple Crayon. Once he got a little older, I mean, like September and most kids, he loved Dr. Seuss. I think far and away his favorite was probably Fox in Socks, Sir. I had that book memorized for a while because we would read it just about every single night. P.D. Eastman's Ted and Fred, Big Dog, Little Dog books, and the Crazy Birds from the Best Nest. And he loved Go Dog Go, particularly that part about, do you like my hat? Which is kind of funny now since he is all about the hats. Did I tell you we got a new bowler hat over Christmas?
No, a bowler? You know, like the round, curvy brim bowler hat?
Yeah. Sam's Tuxedo Shop up on High Street. He was there on the last day that Sam was in the shop before he retired. So he got this great deal for like $15 on this amazing high quality hat. So basically, hats are for Wyatt what shoes are for me. If you give Wyatt a hat, he's going to need another hat to go with it.
So I bet he liked the Give a Mouse a Cookie series.
Oh, yes. He loved all those books by Laura Numeroff. And he was big on Doreen Cronin and Betsy Llewellyn's Click Clack Moo, Cows That Type series, too. And here's something that's really strange, though. It's about a series that you mentioned that September really loved.
Which one? Dora, right?
Yeah, no, not Dora. As much as Wyatt has loved trains over all the years, he really did not like the Thomas the Tank Engine books or cartoons because trains don't have faces.
True.
Instead, during that time of life, he really enjoyed Mercer Mayer's Critter series and Norman Bridwell's Clifford. But basically, if it was something that he enjoyed reading, we ended up with stacks and stacks of those books because we read and read and read whatever books he wanted to read.
Okay, let's stop because I would like to spend a little time on that idea. There's this school of thought out there that kids need to read quote-unquote good books. Books with strong writing, clever plots, dynamic characters. And to that, I'm just going to say nope. Would it be great if every book was good by that definition? Absolutely. I mean, those are the best books if you've got strong writing, clever plots, dynamic characters. But Gina, you and I have both read the occasional twaddle, I'm sure. For adults, we like to call it a beach read. And they're stories that don't necessarily have a lot going for them as far as plot, but they're entertaining. And that's the key. I think we want kids, well, I know we want kids to be enthusiastic about reading. Well, to be enthusiastic about reading, they have to be entertained. And that's going to mean a lot of books that will never make a list of classics, but they're sure a darn lot of fun, and it gets the kids hooked on the power of story. If we're only allowing the kids to read books from this list that we curate for them, and it adheres to these high literary standards, they're really going to miss out on just some magic.
I think that's where some people might get hung up. It's the fact that a lot of early reader chapter books are designed for kids to read on their own, and they feel pretty simple.
Well, they do. And that's okay because that's the point. Because we want, you know, that kid to be able to take a book and curl up in a cozy spot and read on their own. Can kids handle bigger stories in a rich vocabulary? Sure, absolutely. But those are the books that we can share with them through read alouds. Because with a read aloud, our kids can experience stories that just might be a little bit too challenging to tackle on their own. But it's important for them to develop and to practice that they read something so they develop that love of reading at all. So I am always going to be in favor of a kid reading whatever they want for their personal reading time. I mean, I certainly did not care about the Judy Moody or the Disney Fairy series when September was into those, but she enjoyed them. And that's all that I cared about. So whether it's cereal boxes or comic books, let the kids read what they want to on their own time. They're developing their skills for story, they're developing their skills for decoding language, and they will soon be hungry for something bigger and something more. So, okay, Gina, that's my spiel, stepping off the soapbox now. Where do you come down on that whole quality reading thing?
Well, like you, I am a lifetime reader. It was my gateway to the world when I was a kid. I mean, I read everything. I read The Boxcar Children, Little House, Nancy Drew, Mad magazines, just so many different things. And I read because it was fun. My very best elementary school memory is from second grade when Miss Morrow would read aloud to us from Heidi. And in fact, actually, Heidi is a book that I actually never want to reread because it lives in my memory as this shining, glittery, perfect moment. And if I read it now as an adult, I mean, there's simply no way it's going to be as magical as it was when Miss Morrow read to us after lunchtime. But as a teacher, I mean, I've just heard way too many kids at all different kinds of reading levels say, reading is no fun, which always just totally boggles my mind.
Well, that's because someone somewhere has made it no fun for them. And that makes me sad. I mean, it doesn't compute for me at all because I just think, why would you do that to a kid? I have always read what interested me, and I know you have too.
And that's, I think that's really true. And let me tell you, hearing kids say that, man, it lit a fire under me. My goal as a parent, well, as a literature teacher too, but it was to make reading a great, fun time. I wanted Wyatt to have so many wonderful imprinted memories of reading being a cozy lap and a funny story and a gateway into an adventure. So I did all the voices, and it was an amazing time in his life and in mine. So I am definitely in camp, let your kids read for fun. If your kids don't like Little House on the Prairie, then don't force them to read all the Little House books or the Hobbit books or Harry Potter books just because they happen to be your favorite. Case in point, Wyatt read tons of Harvey comics when he was, say, 5, 6, 7. Richie Rich, Casper the Friendly Ghost, Hot Stuff, Little Dot, all of those. There were, maybe there still are, these big collections of those comics in black and white editions, and he loved them. And the illustrations helped him understand the story, even if he didn't know all the words that were there. As he got older, like you said, kids, they want to broaden their horizon. So you can throw in meatier books and weightier subjects about things that are more thoughtful. But even there, when it comes to personal reading time, reading should be fun. It's a pleasurable activity. And that's one of the reasons our local library, it has a huge comic book collection, graphic novel collection. And I'm so glad, because it gives kids a reason to step foot in the library who might not always be there. If the only thing a kid wants to read is a comic book, I'm way okay with that because I still think reading something is better than reading nothing.
Oh, absolutely. There is nothing a librarian loves to see more than kids roaming the stack looking for the book that really grabs them. That could be a nonfiction book. It could even be an audiobook, because audiobooks count as reading. They're a great way to let a struggling reader fall into the world of story. Anything that gets them engaged is fantastic. Save the reading lessons for school. Please, never, ever, ever, ever make personal reading be a chore or a punishment. Reading should be fun. Okay, a little bit of a detour we took there, but it was an important one, I think. So let's get back to our book list, though. What about the chapter book age range? What books were hot at your house for that?
Wyatt still has a Hank the Cowdog poster on his door from way back when, which is why I always recommend John R. Erickson's Hank the Cowdog series. They're just so funny. Not for boys, not for girls, but just for kids. They're really fun for adults, too, if you happen to be reading them. We listened to audiobook versions of a bunch of those on car trips, and Rich and I would be laughing as hard as Wyatt at the sheer madcap lunacy of Hank and Drover and the troubles they get into. So what about you? What were some of the chapter books you'd recommend?
For us, I feel like you absolutely cannot go wrong with Beverly Cleary. The Ramona series is classic just for that reason. And the Judy Blume books, especially the ones about Peter and his brother Fudge, they're just really wonderful books. An early reader chapter series that September really enjoyed, and it's the one we realized where she could read, it was the Amanda Pig series. She also loved Magic Treehouse books. She loved, loved, loved Diary of a Wimpy Kid. The Magic Treehouse books, I think, are so great for introducing history and science and story form. I mean, kids don't even really realize that they're learning something. And the Wimpy Kid stories, they're truly so funny. I mean, I was kind of like hesitant about it, but the comic style illustrations, really fantastic. And once you understand the symbolism of the cheese touch, you'll see that these books really do have quite a bit to offer on a deeper level too. So they weren't my favorites at first, but I came to love them. Anything other than Hank that you recommend for that chapter book reader level?
We ended up with a big stack of the Humphrey the Hamster books by Betty G. Burney. Those were really fun. Oh, Benicula, that's by James and Deborah Howe. Because, I mean, honestly, there's just something so delightfully absurd about a mashup where a vampire bunny runs around sucking the juice out of vegetables. I mean, it's just, and that was great. Of course, these days I would be remiss if I didn't put in a plug for the Joe Harper series of books my husband and I have written together. They're out for the first time in single softcover editions, and they include study questions. 9 current books in the series set in the early days of the 20th century American West. So when it comes time for adventure, Joe and Frog are there traveling on planes, trains, and automobiles, and some horses too. But speaking of adventure, moving into middle reader ages, I really want to give a hat tip to Around the World in 80 Days. Not only is it a super fun book by Jules Verne, there is an amazing documentary series from 1989 with the same name. Michael Palin from Monty Python retraces Phineas Fogg's path and goes around the world in 80 days. It's really fabulous. And it's literature and geography, so big homeschool win there. Kind of transitioning us to some classic children's literature. What are your best picks?
Okay, this could honestly be a whole show of its own, so I'm inevitably going to leave out one, but I'll try to narrow it down to the ones that September and I truly just loved. We shared all of these as read-alouds, so, you know, there's some special memories attached there too. So, The Secret Garden and A Little Princess, they have to go straight to the top of the list, as well as Charlotte's Web, Because of Winn-Dixie, and Where the Red Fern Grows. We're okay with books that make us cry. And I think all of those did at one point. And we'll definitely put a list in the show notes with the authors too. I didn't even try to fight back tears as I read those aloud, because I think it's kind of important for our kids to see us experience the emotion in the story and sort of and come to terms with it. So, okay, those were definitely our top ones. I'm also going to add The Phantom Tollbooth, totally hilarious, Wind in the Willows, and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Because when you are still quoting from books years after we read them together, you know that they're just going to be a part of us forever. We spent a magical 2 years with Harry Potter, so that series is always going to make my list of classics. And there are a few books that I think are going to be on a list of classics someday because they do meet every requirement for a lasting story. There's The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill, Where the Mountain Meets the Moon by Grace Lynn, and Sweep, The Story of a Girl and Her Monster by Jonathan Auxier. And those were just beautiful, wonderful stories, and I can totally see kids reading them 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Oh, that's great. Now, you want to know what one of my beefs is about classics for kids in this age range? It's that so many of them are these heart-wrenching stories where characters die or are in really severe danger. I know that dealing with death is an important thing for kids because it's something that we will all deal with sooner or later. But I am such a softy, it just rips me apart. I mean, Watership Down, Charlotte's Web, Old Geller, Where the Red Fern Grows, Black Beauty, The Yearling. I mean, even your beloved Little Women with the death of Beth.
Oh, yeah. Poor sweet Beth. Honestly, her death as a character didn't shake me that much. I think it was Joe's grief that really made the deeper, lasting impression on me. As an adult, I really do appreciate even more how Alcott wrote so wisely about the grieving process.
I think that Beth is the reason that I developed a habit of reading the last chapter of the book to see if everybody makes it out alive. You know, give me a good old-fashioned Sherlock Holmes where I know Holmes and Watson make it out. But we're talking books, not movies. And if you are, though, watching movies, please check out www.doesthedogdie.com, which will tell you right off the bat if the dog, cat, horse, gerbil, or whatever in the movie lives to the end. It is a really great resource for people like me who will never, ever, ever, ever in their lifetime watch True Grit again and will never read Charles Portis's original book.
Well, like I said earlier, book deaths, you know, as of themselves, they don't really bother me that much because, and I get it, most of the time it's a plot device. It sets up, you know, an internal conflict, external conflict, and they are good for plot devices. I think the reason that I'm okay with characters dying or even having a protagonist who's lost a parent to death is that's the reality that September and I live with. And, you know, we're always talking. It's kind of a big subject among people who write books, librarians. We see the importance of seeing ourselves in characters in the books that we read, which is why we need more books today with diversity so everyone can kind of see themselves. And I think for September, she's always going to connect more with a character who's missing a parent than one who comes home to mom and dad every day. So my main criteria is this. When I look at books like that, even with the death, does the book still leave me with a little sense of hope? Because that's all I'm looking for, and that's what a good book does.
I am not a super Gone with the Wind fan, but I spend a lot of that book wanting to clobber Scarlet. But
yeah.
It reminds me of this really great story my friend Diane tells about being 12 years old, and her mom, who is also a librarian, hands her a copy of Gone with the Wind and a box of Kleenex. So then in turn, when Diane's daughter, Beth, was about that same age, she did the same thing, gave her a copy of Gone with the Wind and a box of Kleenex.
Yeah. I'm like you. I don't really remember crying with that book, but I was older than 12 when I read it. And I was so thoroughly irritated with Scarlet most of the time and thinking, Rhett, you could do a whole lot better, dude. But one of the absolute best things about the curated education that we as homeschool parents provide for our kids is that we do know our kids. We know our students. So we know when they're ready for certain topics and which books might be best for really tapping into those emotions. We know which books they might not pick up on their own, but will really resonate once they meet the characters. It's like, I just got to do that little meet cute introduction. I can honestly say that September has enjoyed every book that I've included in her literature courses. She may not have picked up those books on her own, but she enjoyed reading them as assigned. Her takeaways are going to be a lot different than mine from reading those books, but that's the magic of story. We're all reading the very same words, but understanding them, we're doing that through our own point of reference, and so we all get something different.
Okay, since we're talking about this kind of thing, I've got a question for you. It's something we've talked about before, but okay, we've both had conversations with homeschool moms, and they'll say, oh, my child just finished reading, oh, I don't know, Thucydides, History of the Peloponnesian Wars, or Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. And I'll think, really? Your son knows enough about ancient Greek history and the Peloponnesus to make heads or tails of Thucydides? And yeah, it might sound impressive to say our kids are reading Anna Karenina or whatever, but there's a big difference between understanding all the words and the sentences and really understanding what the book is about. So talk to me about being emotionally and mentally ready for books.
Well, I did sort of touch on this, I think, when we talked about letting kids read what they want. Because let them read the light, fun stuff, because that's where they're at their reading level. Like you said, being able to read words, that is vastly different than being able to understand them or the adult themes that they're describing. Some books, you just have to have more life experience to really appreciate. It's not about bragging rights. It's not about ticking boxes on a book list. I mean, we know emotionally kids can handle a lot. And that's where read alouds are important. With us taking on the task of decoding the words and helping them work through the emotions, they can immerse themselves into the story. A story that's age appropriate, though. Not War and Peace. Not Anna Karenina. When the things in the story get hard, we're right there with them. We're never, ever going to experience all the hardships that characters do, thank goodness. But that's kind of the point, because we can experience it through those characters. And then when life does throw the hard stuff, our kids kind of have a sense of how to handle it because we've been there by their side reading the story, helping them process the grief and the pain and the bullying and exclusion that they've encountered through the story. But really, don't expect them to be able to do that on their own with books that are emotionally out of their depth. We will know when our kids are really ready for things. However, I do think when it comes to assigning books to read for literature class, it could be a little bit trickier. So how did you make decisions for what you taught in co-op?
Oh, I don't think it's just a little trickier. I think it's a lot trickier. So here's an example. Ideally, I want to teach Elie Wiesel's Night to kids who are at least, say, 15 years of age. That's the age Elie is in the book. But I would never, ever teach The Bluest Eye to 11-year-olds simply because Pecola Breedlove is 11 years old in the book. I mean, the whole point is that she's traumatized for the rest of her life by what happens to her. I don't want to do the same thing to a bunch of middle schoolers. But it is a hard thing, especially when you're teaching to larger groups, because the older kids get, the more I think it's important that they get pushed a little bit to encounter some hard realities of the world. And it's still far easier to read about a monstrous person like Othello's Iago than it is to deal with a Iago in person. It's easier to read about the horrors of war in All Quiet on the Western Front rather than live through them in real life. So, like you said, we're never going to experience a lot of that ourselves. Hopefully we won't experience a lot of that ourselves, but we can learn so much about life through reading about it. And we kind of meandered into high school territory. So what are some of your high school aged reads? And let's go for things that aren't literary classics. I mean, everybody knows we want people to read Harper Lee or Jane Austen or Emily Dickinson. What are some of your off the beaten path suggestions here?
I would also add Hemingway, Steinbeck, Charles Dickens, and George Orwell to the must-read list. But yeah, there are a lot of good books that definitely fly under the radar that we don't really reach for first. Right now, for September's Survey of American Lit class that I put together, we're exploring identity as it relates to each of the stories and the characters in them. So what's an American identity? How does that affect a personal identity? Honestly, you know, any book that explores identity is perfect for teens because that's exactly what they're doing at that age. So this is a classic, but I don't think that it gets read enough. It's A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. I recommend it for everybody, and it does get September stamp of approval too. So that's one that I think everyone should read. I would also add, for the high school crowd, I'd add The Book Thief. The Wednesday Wars is another fantastic identity probing story, as well as A Long Walk to Water. Powerful story of resilience there. I also like Amy Tan's The Joy Luck Club. And if you don't have time for the whole book, you know, for your class, then just pull out a few chapters to discuss. And here's kind of an odd choice, perhaps, but I really enjoy James Herriot and his short stories that are all kind of collected in his book, All Creatures Great and Small. I mean, there's humor, there's heartache, there's animals, there's compassion. It's kind of got all the feels. So those are my picks. What are yours?
I've mentioned before why it is more of a nonfiction than fiction reader. Maybe he's rubbing off on me because for the past 4 or 5 years, I've been on something of a nonfiction kick myself. So I'm going to go for some of my favorite nonfiction reads for high school kids.
You know, September gravitates toward nonfiction too. I mean, not the history or memoir nonfiction stuff that I like to devour. She's definitely kind of that more science-y, psychology-ish stuff.
So first off, I'm going with Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. True story of Ernest Shackleton, who set forth in August of 1914 on the Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition to make the first Antarctic land crossing. By October 1915, he's got his ship, the Endurance, stuck in ice floes. They spend an Antarctic winter stuck on the ice. The book is nonfiction, but it is the kind of book that if it were fiction, people would say, nah, too far-fetched, implausible. It is a really, really great read.
I've heard really good stuff about it. I will have to add that to my to-be-read list. So what's next?
Empty Mansions, The Mysterious Life of Ugud Clark and the Spending of a Great American Fortune by Bill Dedman. So Ugud Clark, which is spelled H-U-G-U-E-T-T-E, and I'm like, how do you even pronounce that name? But Ugud is the daughter of this self-made millionaire, W.A. Clark. He was one of the industrialists from the 19th century. He was a controversial U.S. senator. He built railroads. He part of founding Las Vegas. Ugud is his daughter, and she's this child of the Gilded Age. And after her family died, she's left with a $300 million plus fortune. She's got houses all over the country, but she becomes a recluse and dies for about 20 years living in a hospital room, even though she's completely healthy. So this is her story. It's the story of the fight over the inheritance that she left behind. For any girl who's interested in art or history or being unconventional, I mean, utterly fascinating. And last but not least, my very, very, very favorite, hands down, of all the books on my list, The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics by Daniel James Brown. And I love this book so much. I read the index because I didn't want the book to be over.
You read the index. That is a whole lot of love for a book.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. But I love everything about this book. I mean, it is simply beautifully written, engrossing characters, and the fact that they're real people is wonderful. It is just, it's so utterly thrilling at points. I'm like, you know how when you're reading and you're flipping pages, just reading as fast as you can so you can see what happens next? That's what this book is like. So the story is told through the lens of Joe Rance. He's a young man on the cusp of adulthood. He's pretty much alone in the world. He doesn't have any real prospects other than trying to get into college and stay on the rowing team in order to help himself get through school. This is a story about perseverance, focus, teamwork, overcoming adversity, building a positive romantic relationship. So it's just wonderful. And one quick last mention for baseball lovers, George Will's Men at Work, The Craft of Baseball. Be sure to get the new edition with the updated introduction from 2010. And that partners really, really well with Ken Burns' baseball documentary as well.
So since you've been reading nonfiction lately, what do you think the benefits are of reading nonfiction?
Well, if we're talking biography, autobiography, memoir sorts of nonfiction, I don't think nonfiction is different from fiction at all. I mean, we're learning about other people, developing a sense of empathy for what they've experienced, seeing how they respond to the conflicts they face during their life. Those are the same exact things fiction does. It's just that in nonfiction, the stuff really happened, and in fiction, it's all made up. But one thing about nonfiction is, at least for me, is that there is a very inspirational quality to it. I mean, The Boys in This Boat did this amazing thing. Shackleton and his crew persevered in the face of long odds and incredible adversity to triumph. So I think that's a big difference.
And we hope that's what this podcast is doing for you. You know, kind of reminding all of you out there that you can do this. Your children can flourish being educated at home. As I said earlier about a great story, and it holds true for life too, there is love, friendship, and laughter, as well as hardship and pain and challenge. The important thing is that you end with a sense of hope and you find the light. And I think when we can't find the words or the inspiration within ourselves sometimes, a good book will always point the way.
I totally agree. And thanks so much for joining us today. If you liked what you heard or want to share your thoughts with us, send us a line at onlyschoolers@gmail.com or track us down on social media looking for the Only Schoolers handle on Facebook and Instagram or in our Etsy shop.
If you enjoy the podcast, please consider supporting us financially. There are monthly expenses associated with keeping everything up and running and bringing all these new episodes your way.
We hope you're enjoying season 3's grab bag topics as much as we are. Be sure to check the show notes for a list of all the books we mentioned today, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we are going to forget the kids and talk about what we have learned from homeschooling.